There's no place like home for the holidays, or HomeDepot.com for holiday decor with great low prices on decorations inside and out, like artificial Christmas trees to light up the living room, outside lights and playful inflatables that bring joy to the neighborhood. Order online and you'll even get free delivery. Holiday decorating improved with a wide assortment of holiday decor from HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done. Free standard shipping on most online orders over $45. Some exclusions apply while supplies last.
Everyone needs more vacation, right? The new United Gateway card knows how to take you away with great travel rewards and no annual fee, ever. The wait for vacation is over. Tap now or visit UnitedGatewayCard.com to apply.
You know what I want? I want a top sandwich!
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast, our Mo Sampson folk. A new episode for the first time since the round table was done, and I'm excited to bring on a wonderful writer, one of my favorite writers, so much so that her written words get sent directly to my email in the way of basketball feelings. It's Katie Heindel. You trust this girl and what she has to say, whether you're a listener or an editor. Katie Heindel, how are you?
I'm good. I like that riff.
Yeah,
bringing it back to the newsletter, huh?
Yeah, well, nice. It's kind of what I'm known for. I like to bring it back around. It's kind of my thing.
I'm good. Thank you for having me on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, big day. Big day for
a magical KDFM. Podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I want to talk to you first about. We were going to record roughly at the time of the Dallas game until we both realized, oh, maybe that won't work. And then I asked you, hey, did you want to record another time? You said, yes, of course. But also, how was that game, the largest comeback in Raptors history?
That game was great. And I have to say, what a great professional writer I am that you were the one who was like, I'm not sure if you're going to have time to record. And I was like, why? The game's at 6. No, the game was at 3:30. So I did not have time. Thank you. Because I would have been so upset if I missed that amazing game. The game was crazy. It was a great game.
Any highlights from it?
Yeah, I mean, the comeback.
Okay.
Well, most definitely. Because it was kind of, at first, it was really like, you know, low-ish energy, sort of like your typical Sunday matinee game. Like, late in the December season, the sense of, like, the year's coming to a close, nobody's paying that close of attention, including the Raptors. Dallas started to, like, really get up by a lot. It was one of those games where I was like writing, working, looking up, and then be like, oh shit, now they're down by 20. Like, it just happened really fast. But I will say, as fast as that happened, so did the comeback, because it was kind of like Lowry was just like, okay, time to get to work. And the speed in which they closed that gap and like the ease in which they closed it, phenomenal.
Or sorry, on a scale of the internship with Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson,
yes,
to Fast and Furious, whichever one is the fastest and furious, where does that comeback rank with roughly 2 minutes and 21 seconds left in the third quarter, down by 30, and coming back to win the game? Where does it rank for you?
See, it was fast, but it wasn't like very furious. They were kind of having the same level of fun. Which I think the internship, I watched it recently on a plane, underrated movie, still holds up. I was very pleased, pleasantly surprised with that. But it was like the best thing about it was the energy and how much everyone was having fun. Like, I know after the game, Lowry was like, it wasn't really me. It was like the bench, but it was him and some of the bench. But he was just like, it's that kind of like quintessential Lowry when not only is he like hitting all his shots and he's completely dialed in, but like he's having such a good time with everything. Because there were shots where like, you know, people would be like gasp. You could hear the collective gasp, or like someone beside me in press row would be like, no way. And then it would like hit, like everything was hitting. And everyone was just like so joyful. Like it was like a deafening noise in the whole arena. You know, people were jumping up out of their seats. Someone in press row broke their seat because they jumped up with such force.
Wow.
Because they were so excited. And like that was the vibe. And I think it was really, it was one of those things where you feel, one, you're so charged up, but then you're also like, how lucky are we to have Kyle Lowry on the Raptors, this player who can just like make, he can generate that kind of comeback, yes, but he can also generate the kind of energy that's like necessary in that kind of comeback, which is like extremely rare, I think.
Yeah, well, it was the first time in over 10 years. It was mm-hmm. 10 years in a day. So saying over 10 years is kind of, you know, it's misleading, but I don't care. Well, it did remind me of, go ahead.
I was just going to say, that he's like, he has generated these kinds of comebacks before. Yes, to your point, there hasn't been.
I was just about to reference one.
Yeah.
There was the game right before the All-Star break against the Charlotte Hornets when they had to sit DeMar DeRozan, and it was the first extended look at Norman Powell and Jakob Poeltl and DeLon Wright with Kyle Lowry, and they came back after not being able to score at all in the game, and it was the first maybe bench mob-esque thing where those guys, DeLon, Jakob, were able to turn defense into offense next to Lowry, mm-hmm. and it felt like very similar in this Dallas game. By the way, listener, Katie also writes for UpRocks and Yahoo, The Athletic on occasion, and Raptors Republic. I didn't get that off the top. I was too busy riffing. I wanted to make references, but I'd just like to let you know that right now.
Thanks. Thank you, and it's true. Everything he said is true.
Perfect.
Yeah. I was at that game because I'm writing a piece on Tim Hardaway Jr., so a little challenging after that game to try and get the best out of him because of the loss. But that was an interesting thing to experience. That just like,
was there a question you had planned to ask him that seemed ridiculous in the wake of a 30-point blow, loss?
Yeah. Yeah, like primarily with his winning shooting ability as of late. But you still got to ask those questions. So, and to his credit, a professional, and understood we were talking bigger picture. But difficult energy to like step into a locker room where the entire team has just been slapped by one Kyle Lowry.
I'll wax poetic about Kyle Lowry for longer than I'm supposed to, I'm sure. And to move it along, the first question I had for you outside of...
Oh, yeah, questions.
Yeah, outside of your involvement in the game, what was your favorite present that you received as a child?
Oh, my God.
And while you think, I'll also acknowledge, yes, The Internship definitely holds up. It's one of those movies I go back to if I want to fall asleep. It's such an easy watch, and there's a lot of dynamism in the movie. It's not so bad, but back to you.
Yeah, I didn't know this is going to get really, like, psychological, but I should have known. It's you and your questions.
You and your questions. Oh, that well, I wish I had.
I'm happy to answer this, but I'm also happy to tie it back to the Raptors, because a gift that really stands out for me, and I think it was kind of like around the time the team came into existence, because I think like there's no shame in admitting when you're a kid who is just starting to like get into basketball, and you're also like, what is this sport? You know, my exposure to it had been pretty limited locally. You know, we didn't have a team, didn't have anything in Canada. So to get on board with like the branding and the Raptor and like the look of the team in that way, and went into the time when you most want a starter jacket, which I feel like is between 6th and 8th grade, I got a Raptors starter jacket for Christmas one year. A throwback hasn't done this justice. Just like extremely loud, extremely like over the top, And I wore it. I wore it every single day. Well into summer.
Well into summer. Wow. That's, I remember I was working at Foot Locker some years ago and the starter jackets had made a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a Raptors one and a Hornets one. They had all the throwbacks, but it seemed like they were missing something. And maybe it was Katie Heindel to be wearing it at the time to make it work. Did you ever get any really great compliments about it? Was it a hot button issue at school to think, hey, Katie's got this sweet jacket. We love those Raptors. And now she's wearing it all around the school day in, day out. Well into summer.
You kind of run a risk, I feel like, at that age, because you want to look cool and have cool stuff and like be admired and like acknowledged by your peers for it and hope that you have friends that will support you. But it also is a very testy age. And I don't know if it's as much for boys as like girls at that age, but there can be very weird like power, like dynamic shifts almost on the daily in like girls' young friendships. And I feel like, you know, one day you're friends, the next day you're enemies with someone, but you don't actually know why or what you did. So you got to be cool, but you can't even appear too cool or like too eager or look like you're trying too hard. Everything is just about like existing and like
the
least amount of disruption that you can. So throwing the jacket in the mix was kind of tricky. You don't want to come off looking like, you know, you're trying too hard, but
it was a power play.
It was a power play. I mean,
yeah,
I think
big time.
I hope I had the sense to like, I probably just wore it, but didn't really talk about it, you know?
Okay. Calm, cool, collected.
Yeah.
I had a Phoenix Suns hat and it was a throwback snapback. One of the old ones before the snapbacks came back into vogue. And I loved that hat. And at that point in time, it was when girls would wear your hat if they liked you. And I had a really cool hat. So that intersection became it was a common thing. The worst thing that ever happened to me, though, in school, and I don't even know if this happened, but I was told this happened. I, for some reason, one day, I took the hat off and a very small moth flew out from under it. And it ruined me.
Like a moth flew out from your head?
Like, for some reason, there was a moth between the hat and my head.
No.
I guess so. And that, it took away the shine of the hat completely. And it, everyone called me Moth Boy in Half Squat for the next 4 years.
That's rough. Do you get a little bit anxious when you see Phoenix Suns gear?
Only because of, you know, my feelings about Kelly Oubre Jr. and Ricky Rubio, but no other, there's something there, but no other reason besides that.
No other latent psychological trauma.
No, my dad's a student counselor and we worked it out. We went through a lot of talks. And,
oh, good.
Yeah, we
good.
Figured it out.
Good.
I watched a lot of slideshows of moths and learning their motivations, things around that. He was just trying to get to the light. But
yeah.
I genuinely was so upset because I loved that hat. But it was then tainted.
Yeah, and you can never wear that hat again at that age.
No, it was over. Mm-hmm. I never had a starter jacket. They weren't popular. But I had like a Jordan brand varsity jacket.
Okay.
But nobody liked basketball in my school, so I didn't really ever get to wear it. They thought it was too much. I also had bright purple shoes. They also thought that was too much. But once I came to Saskatoon.
Here comes Moth Boy.
Yeah.
Moth Boy.
And I don't know if I have a favorite present. I can't remember. I remember my brother, though. He got the fourth season of The Simpsons when he was maybe 12.
Okay.
He lost his mind. And that's the most visceral. That's the most visceral present I can remember anyone ever getting. It was like a come to Jesus moment. Like, The Simpsons today? I can't believe it. But maybe to move this along, on to my next question. And it's regarding Kyle Lowry, the player that we both enjoy so much. And it is from your fantastic feature on him for UpRocks and a quote from it.
Mm-hmm.
Oversimplified, maybe. But everything else, Lowry's attitude and the running commentary on it, his longevity in the league, his talent, is an outcome of not taking Lowry at face value. Now, do you think after this incredible string of games that the fandom has a better sense of his worth, or is this fleeting?
I mean, what's frustrating to me is, like, I honestly don't feel like I can help the people that are still looking for proof or, like, needed even that game, the Dallas game, as proof of the fact. To me, if you didn't believe it by then already, like, almost, like, to me, like, the playoffs were the proof. And I know Kawhi, like, I get it. Like, we didn't get there without Kawhi Leonard. But we didn't get there without Lowry. And then you didn't get there without Lowry. And you have to, in that, you have to take into consideration his entire career, because it's just been, like, an uphill build. Yeah, there have been some dips, you know, and places where, like, you're kind of like, oh, what's he doing? Like, what could this mean? But, like, he's always come back and he's, like, carried this team to where it is. And if anything, it's like he's just almost on his way to coming full circle. So, like, a very roundabout answer to your question is, if you're still looking for proof, unfortunately, I don't think you're ever going to find it, because just by virtue of looking, you just, like, you're still waiting to be convinced. And, like, I'm sorry to say, Lowry doesn't need to convince anybody anymore, in my opinion.
Evidenced by him pointing to, you know, a fake ring, a non-existent ring around his finger after missing a huge shot in the Pacers game. He decided to flex on the fans, like, yeah, but I have a ring. So he obviously does not care what anyone thinks. He's just going to resort back to that, which, power move. I would liken that to wearing a starter jacket every day, well into summer, by the way. What do you think?
Absolutely. And I mean, look, like, think of, like, the crowning achievement of, like, your own life. It doesn't mean that you didn't go on to have, like, extremely shitty days after that. You know what I mean? And, like, at the end of the day, for Lowry, like, this is his job. It is his job. It is, like, yes, a huge part of his life right now, but it's just, like, it's his workaday routine. And, like, sometimes there's going to be shitty days in that where there's, like, other elements at play. That game specifically would have been a tough game to win no matter what. Like, a back-to-back, they had to travel. It was actually extremely close until it wasn't. But, like, that's just sports, man.
Yeah, well, if you type in Kyle Lowry Hall of Fame, one of the first things that comes up is my piece pitching it. And the first thing I ever wrote for Raptors Republic was titled, "We Don't Need to Worry About Kyle Lowry." And Blake told me... Yeah, and Blake told me, oh, this will be good right now. Not everyone agrees on this. And he was like, yeah, how crazy is that?
People won't ever, you know what I mean? Like, people, there's always going to be someone looking for a reason not to like Kyle Lowry. He is polarizing for reasons I don't understand, because I'll just never think that way. And, like, you can't convince me otherwise. So in that, I know I feel that way. I've stopped trying to convince other people. I'll still always write about him because he's one of the most interesting, like, my fandom aside, I think he's, like, one of the most interesting players, not just in the league today, but in the league in, like, the last 10 years. And he keeps getting more interesting.
Yeah, well, he's mercurial a little bit, but also I think it's quite clear that he's very, very intelligent.
So smart, yes.
And how he navigates everything, the court, or how he's speaking to media, it's so evident what type of intelligence he's working with, and that he's not trying to let everybody in on that. He's aloof with it. Mm-hmm. And the fruits of his labor are borne out in other parts of his life, whereas some people, when they're really, really intelligent, they like to put it on display rather than use it to, you know, orient themselves without saying anything. But Lowry is the opposite. It's just this quiet command of his life and the court and seemingly everything that he puts his fingers on, including the players he mentors, OG, Pascal, whatever. Its success comes with it because of, you know, his intellect, his work ethic, there's an ethereal essence to Kyle Lowry that I don't think anybody has ever been able to sum up properly. Mm-hmm. And which is maybe more fun, because that means that everyone will keep trying and will have more and more opinions from more and more voices about how special Kyle Lowry is and was. And I'm happy that you're one of those, because I think your feature was very, very good. And much like a basketball feelings post. There's some poetry in what you write that is just so, it's very nice to read. And to have that coupled with Kyle Lowry is great. So I was very happy to read that. And I was very happy to read a quote from it.
But thank you.
I love Kyle. He's fantastic. Do you have a favorite Kyle moment of this season?
Do I? I mean, that's up there. That's for sure. Like, just, I don't know. There was one shot in that Dallas game. He shot it from, like, forever away, like, so far away. And it didn't even hit the rim. It just, like, sunk right below the rim into the net. And then it kind of, like, shushed against the net and, like, sprung back forward against, like, the front of the net. And just, like, the force at which it hit. And, like, I don't know. There was something extremely beautiful about it. I think that's when the person's chair broke next to me. but yeah, no, I'll say that game, because I think, like, this season hasn't been going on that long, even though it feels like it has. He was out for like a pretty big chunk of it. I enjoyed watching him watch the games when he was out. I was sad he wasn't playing, but I do think, like, when he's watching, he's working almost just as hard, because you see that when he goes into games like the Dallas game, the games before, and now that he's fully back in the rotation, he's taken everything he's learned by watching the team and, like, put that into practice, you know? I think, like, this is a kind of a cop-out because it's not one moment, but I've enjoyed seeing how he has stepped more fully. He was, like, always a decent, like, distributor, and he did a lot more of that last year with Kawhi. But now really, like, stepping fully into this role of, like, playmaking, and not just, like really thoughtful playmaking. When he did that lob to Boucher, and Boucher dunked it, and then Boucher said after the game, even, like, he's like, yeah, I wasn't even going for the dunk. I was going for the rebound. But Lowry, in his mind, saw already what Boucher could do before he could do it. Before he saw himself doing it, you know what I mean? Those are the kinds of elements and moments that I think, like, really, if you don't believe in Kyle Lowry's intelligence in those times, I think you're hopeless.
Well, that's, I love the Boucher and Lowry duo, because Boucher is an agent of chaos and Lowry is an agent of precognition. So it's tough, because Lowry's looking for Boucher to come running in to break, like, a bull in a china shop. And that's what made that game-winning dunk at the end of the Dallas game so fun, because I'm sure Boucher had no idea that he was going to be dunking it. Suddenly, he's just running, catching up on offense. Lowry has attracted three players to him, opened up the lane completely, and because he's such a heady passer, the guy who's supposed to be tagging Boucher rolling to the rim is hanging out, probably trying to take away the corner three on the opposite side, and Boucher comes in and throws down a dunk. All because of Lowry, how he's able to manipulate everything. But mm-hmm. I do like that you highlighted the team this year, and there's no doubt that this Raptors team has been incredibly rewarding to watch up until this point. And what about this island of misfit toys, let's say, do you enjoy the most? And what does it say about life that in the world that anyone in the NBA, in the tip-top percent of what they do and that make incredible money, but so many of them can be made to feel cast away? What does that say?
Players, you mean?
Yes, players. Yeah. No, well, no, the toys.
I didn't know if you meant as fans. Thanks. I know you didn't mean toys.
Let's get snarky. Let's do it.
I think that, one, to the first part of your question, I think that why it's working so well, or why it seems like so much fun, or like why the Raptors are excelling at it, is because, like, you forget, like, that aside from last year, this sort of, like, disparate piece team where you're just kind of, like, figuring out weird lineups, like, trying to, like, you know, almost, like, alchemize player relationships and chemistry as you go, that's, like, where the Raptors are most comfortable, because, like, that's where kind of this team had to operate out of for so long, with, like, not a lot of star power, not, like, wanting to draw these, like, well, no one wanted to come to Toronto to, like, draw these big names up here. So that now, like, this year, even if you assumed, like, the Raptors went into this year healthy and everybody was healthy and we didn't have, like, this kind of rash of injuries that we did, it is still a team of, like, misfits. And I would, like, even hazard to, like, go so far as to say without those injuries, you wouldn't have the kind of pressure. Like, Nurse said this post-game, but just, like, historically, it's a team that fights. And, like, no, he hasn't always been in the head coaching position to see that, but he's been around enough to understand, like, there's, like, a pressure point for the Raptors where they either, like, fight, like, they catch up and fight, or they're, like, I don't know. But I actually haven't seen the contrary of that for a long time, where they just kind of, like, throw in the towel. They are, like, less apt to do that. And I think the way you do that and the way that's been proven to do that is, like, you just get weirder and weirder with the rotations, and, like, you give all these other players an opportunity to, like, shine and to prove it, because, like, that is, like, historically who works in the Raptor system. It's, like, castaways from other teams who are perfectly good. Like, they're good enough to be in the NBA. It's just, like, they're not good enough to get minutes when you've got, like, a juggernaut kind of, like, star-studded roster that people maybe want to see more on television. Does it make for more entertaining basketball? Not really. And I think, like, I really am enjoying, as a Raptors fan, looking more, like, league-wide and seeing the response, because people are finally seeing, because of the championship, they're watching the Raptors, but they're finally seeing how fun of a team it is and how fun it can be when you've got, like, a weirdo group of misfits. The difference is they don't play like that because they also play as, like, a cohesive unit. But that's, like, due to chemistry and more, like, invisible factors. And also, I think, like, very smart playmaking and determination. But, like, they, I don't know. It's, like, a really rare quality. And I think I've gotten off track, but, like, definitely. Yeah. It's something that you could really, like, theorize and talk about for a really long time. And it's something that when you watch other teams, like, you know, you kind of realize how spoiled we are, because other teams, even when they ostensibly have a great star, like, I love watching the Bucks because I love watching Giannis, but, like, there's, like, kind of a most, like, that they play more technically and it's a bit more of, like, a flat quality of basketball, you know, where the Raptors are sort of, like, there's, like, hiccups and weird false starts and, like, explosive moments and, like, blunders sometimes, but, like, you're never bored.
They're an incredible team to watch, and it definitely lends itself to, and I've always disliked the idea that it's rings or bust and there's no other way to view the NBA. I think it makes the game seem so much worse that way, because the Raptors, for example, who, it's going to be very, very difficult for the Raptors to win a championship this year without Kawhi Leonard in tow, obviously. Who knows? Anything can happen, but that doesn't mean that it's based in entertainment. And I know that's their job, and it's great for teams to win the championship. Obviously, everybody who's listening to this podcast, you and I, we're reveling in the Raptors championship and the season afterwards. So that's important. But also, the Raptors this year are maybe just an ode to how fun the regular season can be, mm-hmm. and how meaningful basketball on a Sunday matinee game for who, maybe a kid that got to go to a basketball game for the first time that now has that instilled in him or her, that they were able to enjoy that game, and kids who, or people who get to watch the games, and that's, like, semblance of something nice for them, is just, that's what the game is, that's the purpose it serves, that's, you know, its intended function in society, even though it's grown to something else and now it's big business and everything like that. But at the very basis of it, we're connecting with players like Kyle Lowry and to their stories, and to Boucher, Terrence Davis II, players like that, and watching them succeed and becoming, you know, invested in their success. And it's just really cool to watch so many players who have been, like you said, it's disparate pieces that have come together and maybe cast away from other teams because we are invested in their stories, and to watch them come together under the emblem of the Raptors to find, you know, quite a modicum of success is probably the most enjoyable part of this season for me. And to watch young guys who, you know, I'm older than OG, I think, but I identify him as a young guy because that's just how you view it when you watch this game, because they are so abstract in a way, but you watch him improve and it's meaningful. Pascal as well, things like that. It's just, it's really cool to watch the Raptors. And I did, I just wanted to highlight that. I'm glad with what you said though. Very, very happy.
It is cool. And like the last thing I will say about it though, is I think we are also lucky because in a league like the NBA, the longevity of teams obviously has a shelf life, barring even like trades, and it's rare for teams to like stick together for this long. But what we're kind of witnessing right now and what the Raptors have made it clear that they're investing in is like bringing up this young core, this young new core, and like they've shown it first, but then they've gotten comfortable enough saying it. Like, you know, it's like Siakam, Fred, OG, Norman Powell, you know, guys like Boucher now have an opportunity to also like add to it. But you're seeing this like transition, and it's like a generational shift in a team. And like, that's super rare too, because teams don't necessarily have multiple generations of talent playing at the same time.
Yeah, it's very Spurs-esque. And
it's Spurs-esque, but it's not boring.
No, it's definitely not boring. It's interesting, though. I like that you highlighted that, the changing of the guard, kind of. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's highlighted most by Pascal Siakam when he did How Hungry Are You? When he was asked who's his point guard, Kyle or Fred, he said Fred, which seems crazy to probably you or to me, because we're so attached to this rendition of the Raptors that is led by Kyle, that while we enjoy Fred's story, it's kind of unconscionable to think of Fred as our point guard. But Pascal highlights that it is a changing of the guard. Things are fluent, and the Raptors are, even through so much success, in a transition period, and still being able to play so well in it while being able to have players improve in meaningful ways is really cool. But that is a good point, the changing of the guard. I have one last question for you, Katie, and it's a long one.
Oh, boy.
Because I'm going to be reading an excerpt from the latest Basketball Feelings, in which you said, and quote, "With Doris Burke, it was like that. Sirad took me and physically stood me close enough that I could be there to seize a moment should it come. But where we were was somewhere I could have walked to by myself, but I was waiting for permission. When I saw, like physically saw it in strange slow motion, the moment crack open to go up and introduce myself, it was clarifying and scary and overwhelming at once to see that permission out in the world like that is a barrier we use like a sign. In that, if I am given permission to do this, then I will." End quote. I love that. I loved it a lot, because every self-help book that tells you you're a rock star and to dominate social interactions seems disconnected because it isn't quite that simple. You phrasing it that way made me think about how we naturally preserve the unknown by staying away from it, looking onward, frozen within action. How permission looks like different things to different people. It's fluid and changing. And since I'd like to try and relay this into basketball, Nick Nurse's willingness to try things that other coaches laugh at league-wide is the success that he's found a reward for making himself vulnerable and doing these things without the league's permission in an abstract sense.
Good question. And thanks for the highlight. I mean, yeah, I think what, like, you've seen like Nurse sort of like revel in the successes, and the successes are oftentimes highlighted less than the failures, because I think, like I wrote, a lot of the times, like, we are more attuned to failure as like something to curb and like mandate our actions by, because it's often the thing that, like, it's either embarrassing, it feels like emotionally or like psychologically harmful to us. Like, it's like the easier barrier to follow, you know, hence being like afraid to go up and introduce yourself to like one of your idols. But then there's also something in realizing, like, when you get to the point when you realize, like, the worst thing about failing is just that, and then you kind of get past that point, you're like, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? This doesn't work. Or like, this doesn't work how I've like pictured it. And then you think, like, well, if I've already pictured past this point, that doesn't mean that's like enough of a reason to just do something. And like for Nurse, like, he already is like seen in small ways, I think, for him. Like, I'm sure the huge games and, like, the giant comebacks, obviously, like, that's what's going to get talked about. That's what's going to get picked up league-wide. But it's, like, you can see, like, the kind of specific weird coach's joy he takes out of, like, the small tweaks that he makes and the seemingly, like, strange decisions more almost than, like, the big culminative effects. Because, like, ultimately also, like, anything in life, to get to those big successes, it's always a result of just, like, continuing to plug away at something, you know? Like, I think that's the thing that's, like, most boring to talk about, so, like, doesn't get equated with success all the time, is, like, success is just the result of, like, you just gotta keep trying, you know? And, like, you gotta fuck up sometimes, you gotta fail, things can, like, blow up in your face, but then, like, if you wanna do it, you now are, like, more equipped than you ever were to make the right decision, if you wanna look at it that way. And I think Nurse has, like, done a really great job of that, because by process of elimination and, like, kind of a hand that's forced dealt to him in, like, injury upon injury upon injury, even, like, bench guys getting injured, now he's got, like, less options to, like, throw into the roster if he gets in a tight spot. But now he knows exactly what he can ask of every player to, like, a minute degree almost. You know what I mean? And, like, most coaches don't have that, because most coaches aren't relying on, like, their, like, you know, 10th string guy down the line to, like, pull out, like, a game-winning moment at, like, a very essential time, because they have the luxury of, like, a more or less healthy starting unit. So it's not ideal, and it's certainly, like, you could get into, I'm sure, the longevity of playing like that, but you wouldn't have gotten there, like, without all those almost, like, mini failures, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. You build upon what you fail upon, and then that eventually becomes success, as you equated better than I just did. I'm interested, how much would you pay for a Nick Nurse hat? What's the highest you would?
I wouldn't pay anything.
No, it's free or nothing. If you got one for free, would you wear it well into summer?
They're, like, very, if there's, like, maybe another colorway, I have to say, this just might be, like, my a generational thing, but they're, like, way too close to a Nine Inch Nails logo for me. Like, there's something very gothic about them. So I might sell it. I'm sure the resale value would be quite high.
Wouldn't it be way funnier to wear it to all the scrums that he's in? Wouldn't that be worth it?
No,
I think that'd be so funny.
I think right away he'd call you on it.
But then you could feign ignorance, and it would maybe become funnier.
Like what? Wait, is the assumption that I was given one, or that I had one custom made?
Either or. It doesn't matter how the hat came into being. It's just that it comes about, and so clearly you aren't willing to pay for it. So nope. let's say it was, let's say a stork came in with it and it dropped it off at your front stoop, provided that you have a stoop. Not everybody does, but stork and a front stoop, an NN hat that was very reminding of Nine Inch Nails and gothic stylistic ways. I don't actually know what Nine Inch Nails logo is, so that reference goes over my head, by the way.
Give it a quick Google afterwards.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
Well, right before I'm editing War, What Is It Good For, very loud into your intro, like a wrestler's bit. I would wear a Nick Nurse hat to a Nick Nurse scrum.
Okay.
I think, I don't know how many times I'd do it. I'd pay $25 for the bit. I'd pay $25 for the bit, definitely. So $25 is how much I'd pay for a Nick Nurse hat. And you're still set at zero.
Zero. And then what would you be prepared to say to him when he inevitably called you on wearing the hat?
I think I would just leave it up to what I was feeling at the time. I have a certain confidence in my ability to improv, especially with Nick Nurse. We have a bit of a rapport. So I'd go and I'd wing it. That's how I feel about that.
Okay. You'd do it in kind of a Nick Nurse style yourself.
Exactly. Yes.
That's fitting.
I've already put myself in vulnerable waters with Nick Nurse. If he ever listens to the podcast, every once in a while I have a Nick Nurse impression, and if he hears it, I don't know if he'll be happy. I'm not super sure. The one response I got to it was, why does your Nick Nurse impression sound like Brad Pitt from Inglourious Basterds? And I thought I'd just respond with Buongiorno. I didn't know what else to say.
Yeah, you gotta live your truth, man. Just like Nick.
Here's the scenario. Your insurance company is denying your long-term disability claim despite the fact that you've paid premiums for years and your own doctor insists that you're not well enough to work. If this sounds familiar, call Goldfinger Personal Injury Law. You'll speak with me, Brian Goldfinger, a licensed and experienced lawyer who practices exclusively on behalf of accident victims, disability claimants, and their families. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
I'm trying to think of one last thing to talk about before we end the podcast, because, listener, I'm very sorry to say, a tweet went out, but we received no questions, which is understandable. It's the morning of Christmas Eve. Everybody's busy. But maybe this is
a
question,
Katie. Are they busy? I don't think people are that busy, but that's fine.
Busy with family, maybe? Is that
last minute shopping? Maybe.
How many times have you done shopping on the 24th? Or are you more prepared usually?
Usually pretty regularly. Like right after we are finished, I need to go out and pick up some things. That's funny. A mix. I'll usually like do the big ones. And then what happens this day is I kind of panic because I'm like, oh, shoot. Like there's more I could have gotten, you know? The more time you give me before Christmas in this case, or like a holiday, the more time I will work myself into thinking there needs to be more done. Yeah, I kind of like it better with a short runway.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I was like, well, I'm taking the plane ticket home. That's a present. Like my presence is a present. Kiss my ass. Some sort of quote like that. But it's as I got here and we did, there was a preliminary night where there were some people who were at a family junction. Or function, I should say. A family function, not a family junction. there were some people at a family function who weren't able to be there for Christmas. So there were some presents done then. And I said, oh, maybe I should be buying presents. So I went out and bought some presents. But also my family, they don't typically want anything from Mexico. They're not that keepsakey. So for some people in my family, I did get things from Mexico, just keepsakes and stuff like that, and unique little cultural items, tile work maybe. But
beautiful.
Yes. Oh, man, the tile work is, especially in Puerto Vallarta, it's everywhere. It's one of my favorite things about there. Also, the heat definitely is nice.
Yes.
But, yeah, I definitely went shopping yesterday for people's presents, and it is such an addictive thing to give people stuff. Especially if you're able. And I can't believe rich people don't do it. More shame on them. Unbelievable.
I love giving presents. No, man, I agree with you.
There's nothing like it. Giving a really good present, what would that be akin to? Is there an allegory or an analogy for that? What does that feel like? Is there a basketball feeling? can we tie this up in a really nice bow?
Yeah, I feel like we already talked about it. It's like the Lowry assist over to Boucher. Like he gave him the gift of that moment. He gave him the gift of like standing out, probably having like one of the most standout plays of that game, getting to like put his stamp on it and like elevating him in what was already going to be like a very exciting and memorable occasion. He let Boucher like tie his own bow on everything.
And it was a career high.
Yeah.
Wow. It all comes around.
That's the feeling. I feel like the feeling when you give someone, whether it's the gift they really wanted or it's something that you have come up with yourself knowing that they'll really want it and they've given you no clues, it must feel like I imagine what dunking feels like.
Dunking feels pretty good, I gotta say. The first time I ever dunked was better than giving a really good gift, I gotta say. It was really special.
Okay, but don't unique. Try to like stop taking away from my
now. Okay, I'm very sorry.
But fair.
It's, yeah. What's your favorite gift you've ever gave? Oh. And that'll be then we'll get out of here. So you can go shopping for maybe another gift.
No, the last minute ones are never that great. to be fair. I will say just because of like it was one of those ones that wasn't like asked for or really like even hinted at, but I got my dad a really cool vest. Like, I feel like men get to a point, some of men in their lives, where they're like into vests, but they don't like know how to start. Like,
vests are definitely a thing.
Wearing them. And I'm talking kind of like, not like crazy technical vest, like a mountaineering vest. And I'm not talking about a formal vest. It's just kind of like, it's got a certain amount of pockets. It's like fitted, but like not too fitted. A bit warming, you know, it's just like a versatile thing they can kind of throw on anything and it like ties everything together and there's like room for all their junk because like dads typically have a lot of just like stuff in their pockets most times.
Anyway. My dad just started wearing a vest, by the way.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So,
listeners, I want to say, if you feel like your dad is nearing this time in his life, I would encourage you to get him a vest because the one I got from my dad, he still wears it almost every single day into the summertime. And the week I gave it, like the week after Christmas, when I gave it to him that year, he sent me a photo every day that he had my mom take of him, like photo shoot style posing of him wearing the vest. Sometimes thinking, staring off into the distance, sometimes pretending like he's going for something in the pocket of the vest. And just like how happy this like kind of not active gift made him. And because it was so unexpected, but, you know, seemed to really enhance his everyday life in that sense, even because it was like a superfluous gift in a way, you know,
it That's wasn't fantastic.
Like something he needed nor something he thought he wanted, but it's something he loved so much. So yeah, I feel like the vest stands out for me.
I think that's the perfect gift because obviously people want things, but when you identify something that they need that they didn't know they needed and you get it for them, that's the perfect gift, I think. So it sounds like you hit the nail on the head with that one.
Thanks. And I'm probably going to see him wearing it later today. So it's great.
Big moves.
Big vest moves.
Yeah, big vest moves.
What's your best gift you've given?
The best gift I've gotten. Sheesh. Wow. Jeez. All right. Best gift I've gotten. My mom has, well, the dog I got when I was 12, Izzy, lives with my mom. And Izzy is older now and can't quite jump up onto the bed.
Oh.
Izzy will kind of rough and growl at my mother when she leaves the bed at night. And so I got my mom steps for Izzy to get up onto the bed. And I think that's very helpful so that she doesn't have to wake up.
Beautiful gift. That's very thoughtful. You're enhancing the lives of two separate creatures. Well, a person and a creature.
Yeah. And also for my dog Poe, I haven't put him in any clothing, although he would look darling. And I've done that so that he can be more comfortable. So that's, you know, it's a gift to him that I'm not subjecting him to clothing as a dog.
The gift of respect. Yeah.
Exactly. He does have a little bandana, though. But it's because he gets so cold in Saskatoon. Oh. So he has to be warmed up a little. It's his first time seeing snow. He's a little Mexican guy. And it's so funny because it's cold outside and he's never felt cold. He shakes off like he's wet because he feels the cold in the air. So he's like, oh, there must be water on me. And he just shakes like he's wet all the time when he's outside. It's really funny.
I feel him. The cold bearing down on you. Oh,
exactly. This little small man. Okay, well, Katie, yeah. I feel like that's little small man out on the town. All right. I feel like this is a great place for you to take the floor. It's all yours to tell the people where to find you, what to do.
Okay, guys. you can subscribe to Basketball Feelings if you haven't, where Sam decided to read out beautifully an excerpt from the most recent Basketball Feelings. That's on Substack, basketballfeelings.substack.com. You can follow me on Twitter at whatevs, WTEVS, where I'm just like, that's where all the freelance stuff that I'm doing is going up. Today, this morning, the latest thing I've written is a comprehensive gift guide of what to get your favorite NBA player for Christmas. And they're all there, folks. We got Jokic. We got Durant. We got Westbrook. We got Ja Morant. We got Kyle Lowry. Anybody you could think of, they're on this list. And I've thought of the perfect gift that you could give them.
Will you give us one teaser? What's one gift?
Yeah. Okay. This is tough now because I have to pick the best one. Okay. What? Devin Booker. the only thing a permanently petulant and permanently 16-year-old boy who has everything he would or could want, the skin of the Suns gorilla as a coat.
Okay, I like it. Very good. Yeah. The Suns gorilla, I wonder how they stumbled onto that.
Just a terrifying representation.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, wait, here, I have another one for our dearly departed friend, Kawhi Leonard. The same thing he wishes for every year, a reasonable sense of accomplishment.
Yeah. Well, that was also, you noted in your Basketball Feelings, was stumbling onto a very intimate moment of Kawhi's and trying to leave so that he could have it.
Yes.
Maybe that was a Christmas gift that you gave him, and maybe one of the best gifts you've ever given.
It could have been, you know. He was just, like, extremely lost trying to reunite with his family, and then there they were. And I was like, I'm a real interloper in this situation.
For a moment, did you think he was smiling because he saw you? And it was like, what?
I mean, I think your heart naturally thrills at something like that. But then you realize pretty quick, no, that smile's not for me.
Yeah, I suppose so. But listener, I'd like to thank you for tuning in. Katie, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on. It's been an absolute blast and a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Listener, addressing you again, I'm going to play you out with a very special song, but I just want to thank you for listening. And whether you're getting into this in the morning or at night, have a blessed day and goodbye.
Happy holidays. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely. Never say it again, y'all.
I'm workshopping something, okay? I'm an intro for you, and tell me what you think.
Okay.
What are we thinking, huh?
Why the war song for me?
I don't know. Thought it'd be
fun. Sure. Do it.
Okay, I'll put it in post.
Between prepping ingredients, setting the table, and planning your tomorrow, sometimes you need an extra hand with dinner. Delta Faucet is here to help. Just ask your connected home device to fill your pasta pot with Delta Faucet Voice IQ technology and fill it with the perfect amount of water. Done. Visit deltafaucet.com/voiceIQ to see how Voice IQ can fill your dog's bowl, wash your hands, and more.
Everyone needs more vacation, right? The new United Gateway card knows how to take you away with great travel rewards and no annual fee. Ever. The wait for vacation is over. Tap now or visit UnitedGatewayCard.com to apply.